You are Locked On Nets, your daily podcast on the Brooklyn Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Keep the trump blasting, toe tagging, I'm riding past them. Before you let them ride with the team, you got to ask them, who got snaps on the Petro? Keep it real, don't front, yo.
Welcome to the Locked On Nets podcast, your daily dose of Brooklyn Nets news, analysis, and highlights. I'm your host, David Wurzberger. Thank you very much for tuning in. A great week ahead. We're going to be previewing the Atlantic Division, so you Nets fans can sort of have a clear picture of what teams Brooklyn's going to be going up against the most this season. So we're starting it off with a great interview today. John Corrales of Locked On Celtics. He'll be joining us in a bit, but first, let's just handle some business real fast because it's a long and really good interview. If you're enjoying the podcast, please consider subscribing on iTunes, leaving a 5-star review, sharing it with your friends. More listeners means the podcast gets bigger and better, and that's good for all of us. If you'd like to submit any fan questions, tweet us at LockedOnNets or email us LockedOnNets@gmail.com. Finally, if you'd like to sponsor the show, our email is LockedOnNets@gmail.com. We have affordable rates and reach a great deal of Nets fans. Now let's go to our interview with John Corrales.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Joining me now on the Locked On Nets podcast, John Corrales. He's the co-host at Locked On Celtics. John, thank you very much for taking the night off to talk some Nets.
I'm happy to join you guys.
So I guess let's begin with, I think it's important for fans to sort of see the perspective from other teams, people that cover other teams. And, you know, you're mainly focused on the Celtics, but tell me, how do you feel about the Nets this season and what they did this offseason?
Well, I think the biggest thing that the Nets did was they shored up their front office and their managerial structure. So I think from a pure basketball perspective, that's a very good thing that ownership has kind of stepped back from the win now perspective. They put Sean Marks in. And they put a solid front office structure and put a solid vision for the future in. It's not going to be a very easy road for the Nets. It's going to take a little while, but I feel like finally they have a solid plan for the future, and that's just what you need when you're in this situation. Look, the Nets made a lot of mistakes in the past. And as a Celtics fan, I appreciate those mistakes. But
I was gonna ask you a couple questions down. Can we have some of those picks back, by the way? Like,
nope.
What's it gonna take?
Nope.
Take you out to dinner or something?
Nope. There's nothing you can do. Those belong to us now.
Great.
So, but that's really, I hate to say it, but that was one of the worst decisions a team could make. But what the best thing the Nets could have done was move on from that. And I feel like last season, before the Marks signing and before Billy King was let go, there was an attitude of, okay, we screwed up. Now let's try to make this not as bad. And they were focusing on making the Celtics pick not be as good as it could have been. Where they just should have just been focused on moving forward and just, look, what's done is done, and let's put a plan together for the future. Now they've got that. So I think the Nets are actually in good hands, and if fans are willing to put up with a few years of pain, there's a solid plan for the future, and 5 or 6 years from now, there's something that you can look forward to. It's just not – it's really – the past has been so bad that there's no real immediate fix, not even with any of the – even the tradable players that the Nets have. There's no real immediate fix there. It's going to be a long-term process no matter what. But if I was a Nets fan, I would at least trust the people who are now in charge to put that plan in place. And at least have some hope for the future.
Yeah, you know, I like that you didn't even focus really on some of the players they picked up or anything like that. It's just that the big thing for Nets fans now is they have a plan. It seems like they have a real future, and I like to repeat this year that this is the best time to be a Nets fan, at least in recent history, because you actually do have this plan that isn't, oh, win now, let's just get these players. Oh, Garnett and Pierce on the block, great, take all our draft picks, you know? There's an actual steady rebuilding plan. And you said 5 to 6 years. I think it could be even, you know, shorter than that, maybe 3 to 4 years.
It could be. But I don't think the players don't even matter right now, because by the time the Nets are relevant, maybe none of these players will be on the team. But I think it's all about the front office, and that's how you build a team from the top to the bottom. You need a solid structure to get those guys in place. So that's why I didn't mention any of the players, because none of that matters. Like Jeremy Lin, that's nice, but you know, whatever. That's not going to be your future. So
right.
I think the future lies in the proper structure and building of a franchise.
And let me ask you, because you're a Celtics fan, so you might know a little bit about continuous success in the NBA. what would you like to see? Like, you know, you have Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens a little more recently came in, and they're building this culture here in Boston. I guess what I'd like to know is, what are the key things you see in just the Celtics franchise year after year after year that you think the Nets should be working on building culture-wise with their new front office?
Well, I think for the Celtics, what really sticks out is it is a top-to-bottom thing. First of all, it's the ownership. And I think that was the Nets' biggest problem. Prokhorov was a very come in, spend a lot of money, let's win now, put a lot of pressure on the front office to win now. And granted, Billy King acted under that pressure, but he also acted poorly under that pressure. But I think from the Celtics' perspective, they have an ownership group that has been very solid, no pressure. They have let people do their jobs. They let Danny Ainge put a vision together for the future. And that has culminated in that big trade that landed Kevin Garnett, the trade that got Ray Allen, and big three with Allen, Garnett, and Pierce. And then the willingness to also trade a guy like Paul Pierce, the face of the franchise, who, you know, for a generation, and then Kevin Garnett, the new this transformative entity, the guy that came in and changed the culture of the Celtics, the fact that they let Danny Ainge trade him and both those guys. I say both those guys, like Jason Terry wasn't involved in that trade, but basically both those guys.
Yeah, I don't think ownership would exactly lose sleep over Terry compared to those two.
But Danny Ainge, a lot of teams, to put it quite frankly, they don't have the guts to trade away players like that. And you look at Kobe Bryant. And I had a long conversation with the guys from Locked On Lakers about keeping Kobe Bryant and delaying the rebuild because they decided to pay Kobe rather than trade him or let him go. Rather, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the Celtics decided to let Pierce and Garnett go. They found this trade partner who gave them the world. And now look at where the Celtics are. They now have draft picks. They have young players. They have veterans. They have a number of different ways they can go with their franchise.
Rub it in, why don't you?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that it has to be you guys. But when you look at what it takes to build a franchise, it's solid ownership, trust in your front office, and then beyond that, yeah, they found a coach in Brad Stevens that happens to be one of already the top coaches in the NBA out of college, but the trust to have a vision, execute that vision, find people that fit that plan, from ownership to management to coaching, and then you find the players, and then you go from there. So honestly, I know that Nets fans probably don't want to hear it from me, but what's done is done, and you really have a solid front office now. And if that front office will have the blessing from ownership to do what they need to do, then you'll have a plan that you can put in place, and then the Nets over the next few years will start to get better. That's really all you can ask for.
I can just imagine the listeners right now, like, oh, I don't want to hear from this guy, but he's kind of right. Damn it! But, you know,
at this point, there's really no choice.
Yeah, but with Stevens, you also have to have the trust to not go out and get this big name. I don't think anyone expected it to be Brad Stevens. If I'm remembering that time correctly, where people were like, "Whoa, Brad Stevens!" Like, no one really saw that one coming. It wasn't really a name in the rumor mill. But, you know, instead of going for a big name, they just got rid of Doc Rivers, and they go after this college coach, you know? But let's go into, the Celtics' current roster this season. I think we got to start with Al Horford, obviously the big signing. Isaiah Thomas has his co-star, or Al Horford has his co-star and Isaiah Thomas, however you want to look at it. I have my strong feelings about Horford. I feel like 99 out of 100 just casual, generic NBA fans underrate him by a mile and a half. He's so good at just about everything on a basketball court, and I think he and IT are going to fit really well. I think he's perfect for the Celtics roster. How excited are you for him to be joining Boston?
Very excited. Very, very excited, because not only is he a tremendous upgrade from Jared Sullinger, he is a perfect fit in what the Celtics are trying to do. He is a big man that has the ability to not just roll in the pick and roll. He can pop. He can pass. He's a defender. He can do a lot of different things. It's that versatility that is so valued in today's NBA. So I think having Horford in, and not only that, Horford over the past few days has been heralded amongst the players as this guy who's just coming in and just trying to do everything he can to help everybody. And so he is so team first that it fits. It's easy to make him fit. It's easy to make him fit chemistry wise on the court, X's and O's wise. So it's very exciting to have a guy that plays his position, especially in today's NBA, to have a big that plays his position that is so willing to be helpful in the team perspective, that can pass and shoot and read offense, in the pick and roll situations, and read the defenses and participate in that fully from both ends of the floor. It's just so exciting to see how that's all fitting. Everybody, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, those guys, everybody on this team has just fully embraced him already after 4 full days of practice.
And that's not a surprise at all. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's a great vet. And just, you look at the Celtics roster last year, and the weakness was, it seemed like, the front court. He had this mishmash of players that could do one thing well or maybe another thing not so well. And then you put in Al Horford, right? And he's just, he has the whole package. Like, he's not amazing at anything, I wouldn't say, but he's very, very good at most things on the court. And so what I'm really interested in is with Isaiah Thomas, right? So he's been running pick and rolls this past season with Tyler Zeller, Amir Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, Jared Sullinger. Now he's got Al Horford there. That little combination is going to be scary.
Yeah, and what that allows is for shooters around the perimeter to just do their thing. You can start when Kelly Olynyk is healthy. I think he should start at alongside Horford. Now you have Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, and Kelly Olynyk. Now Olynyk is a 40% 3-point shooter, which is way above average. Crowder is right close to NBA average. If he can improve a little bit and get to average. And then if Marcus Smart can improve and get close to average, and obviously Isaiah Thomas is a dangerous scorer that you have to respect, now you have 4 guys on the perimeter that you have to respect with Al Horford on the floor. And oh, by the way, Al Horford has about league average 3-point percentage.
Yeah.
Now that just opens things up. And if any of these guys can take bigger steps forward, now you have to respect them even more. That allows Isaiah Thomas, who loves to drive, I think he was top five in the NBA in drives last season, that gets him to the rim a lot more. That increases his field goal percentage. It increases his free throw attempts. It increases a lot of opportunities to get assists, to kick balls out to the corners, drive and dish. So it really just allows for a lot more. When Jared Sullinger was a guy that I liked Sullinger, and losing his rebounding hurts, but it didn't have the same effect offensively as a guy like Horford, who is obviously tremendously better offensively. He knows when to roll. He knows when to pop. He knows how to hit open guys. It's just he just impacts everything so much better, and it just allows Brad Stevens to put other players out there that spread the floor. This offense has an opportunity to be a top, at least in the top half. 30 teams, it could be in the top 10. So if you look at what the Celtics are doing defensively, they could be a top 2 or 3 defense. If you can have a top 15 offense, then all of a sudden you've got a really good team.
Yeah, the bar we look at for contenders is usually people like to think of if the team's in the top 10 offense and defense in the league, and the Celtics can pretty easily get there, I think, looking at the roster. I think here's where we might disagree, though, and you know, again, I'm with you on Al Horford being an awesome, perfect fit with the team. It's going to be really fun to watch. But how much does he make the team better? Can they? Let's be real here. I think the Celtics could, you know, in most scenarios this season, they could end up the second seed in the East. I believe so. But can they beat Cleveland? can they top Cleveland?
No. I mean, no. Obviously not. That's not going to be like we're not going to be silly here. They're not Cleveland. Cleveland's in a different class. I see a scenario where Cleveland kind of coasts in the regular season, and the Celtics and or the Raptors can sneak in to get that number one seed, just because they're hungry.
That happens.
That could happen. Cleveland coasts, LeBron coasts, because LeBron is getting older and he's not gonna put that same effort in December, January, February as he will in April, May, and June. So there will be months where people start writing like, oh, is Cleveland kind of falling off or what? No, don't pay attention to that. In the regular season, the Celtics and the Raptors, I think those are the challengers, I suppose. But in the playoffs, it's clearly the Cavaliers. It's clearly
I was hoping for a fight from you, man. I was hoping,
come on, man. I'm not going to be stupid. I know where the Celtics are. I think they're the second or third best team in the East, but the best team in the East has LeBron, and LeBron's just that much better than everybody else, and that team is that much better than everybody else. That in a 7-game series, if it became Celtics-Cavs in a 7-game series, then maybe they'll take a couple of games. Optimistically, they'll take a couple of games, but if they lost in 5, I wouldn't be shocked. But that's, I think we're looking at another Cavs Warriors finals. So that's kind of predetermined.
Yeah.
So I'm not stupid, but I'm optimistic about the Celtics' chances. So, but I think what Al Horford does, and we talked about offensively, defensively, I think is a bigger impact in that he allows for the Celtics to put Amir Johnson when everybody's healthy on the bench. And now you have a solid rim protector in Horford and Johnson. Johnson would come in for Horford. And now you could have about 48 minutes of a solid rim protector on the floor, which increases your fast break ability, which increases your shot attempts, which increases your chances to score. So that, I think, is the bigger impact, that Horford will allow that defense to be better. And that defense will get out in transition for Boston. And with Johnson coming in off the bench and doing the same thing, and young guys off the bench, Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Terry Rozier, young, 22, 20, the two 22-year-olds and a 19-year-old, getting out there, super athletic, running. I think that is where the Celtics offense can really make its mark, not necessarily in just half-court execution, but just running, really upping the pace, taking a lot of shots, a lot of good transition basketball shots. So I think Horford just himself allows enough lineup tweaks to make things work defensively and offensively, and in the style of play that Brad Stevens likes, because he says, quote, we want to fly around.
Yeah, Horford isn't looked at as this lockdown defender generally, but he is really good defensively. And I'm really excited you mentioned the transition. I'm excited to see Horford there, because not only is he going to help these young guys get out on the fast breaks by getting stops and rebounds, but he himself, he'll grab the defensive rebound, start dribbling it up court, picture-perfect outlet pass, boom, an easy score like that. He's really good at taking the ball, starting to go with it. He knows how to fill a lane. He can, you know, catch an alley-oop on the break. He's a really good transition player. A lot of people don't realize that about him. Gets up and down pretty fast. But I'm also curious to see how Brad Stevens is going to use him in some of Stevens' famous ATOs, after timeout plays.
Oh, yeah.
Stevens is known around the league for just, man, he draws up some ridiculous stuff. And I know Horford's going to be a fun tool to play with. But let me ask you this. The Nets have a new head coach in Kenny Atkinson. You guys got Stevens. How many years ago was it now? Was it
his fourth year, I think.
Okay.
Fourth year, yeah.
So let me ask you if you can walk us through the new coach timeline, right? Because there is some adjustment periods. Brad Stevens wasn't pulling out his big guns in the first few months of his first season, right? He wasn't drawing up these insane plays. And, you know, after a few years, he's starting to realize what kind of players he likes on his team, who's getting the playing time. So can you sort of talk us through what that sort of timeline looks like?
Yeah, you know, that is very difficult, because a lot of it is very dependent on the level of talent you have on your team, which I'm sorry to say for the Nets is not very high. So Atkinson could be a very good coach. I don't know. But when you have, I think that Stevens has, well, I'll say this. Stevens has been able to very simply use the talent that he has at its peak. And his approach is simple. Do what you do best and we'll figure it out. So he's not a system guy. And I will contrast this with a guy like Mike D'Antoni, who is a very much a system guy. And maybe this isn't the most popular take in the world, but I'm not a big D'Antoni fan. I think D'Antoni has his system, which when you have certain players, it works very well. But when you don't have those players and you try to force that on a team, it doesn't work well.
Oh, I'm a Knicks fan. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
So, I mean, and then you look at, like, even what Phil Jackson has been doing with the Knicks and forcing that triangle. Like, just work with the guys that you have. That's the big thing. So what Brad Stevens does is, it's not necessarily about his system. It's about who do we have and what's their best role. What makes them the best player they can be?
Yeah, I remember, sorry to interrupt, I remember, like, Evan Turner last year. You know, people had written him off maybe as a bust, to just, no, he's not that good. But, like, he played really well for Boston last year because Stevens let him do what he wanted to do, which is basically get the ball in his hands with some bench units, run the pick and roll, create a little bit.
Yeah, and so that's a great example. That's what I was leading into, that Evan Turner wasn't being played off the ball like he was in Indiana. You needed Evan Turner to have the ball in his hand. So how does that impact the team? You put players around Turner that worked. So when you put Turner in the game and realized that he had to be a ball-dominant guy, you put players around him that worked. You could put Isaiah Thomas off the ball, realizing that Thomas could play off the ball. So when you have a new coach, does he have that approach? Does he have that ability to look at his guys and say, huh, Jeremy Lin plays like this, how do we put guys around him? Or is that coach going to be a system coach and trying to pigeonhole guys into systems, into spots within the system that make them not as effective as they can be?
But you know, with this Nets team, I honestly think it could go either way, really, because it's such a blank slate. You know, they have all these young guys. I guess they have to sort of adjust things with Jeremy Lin and Brook Lopez because they're the two best players and they have certain styles of play. But really, the rest of the guys, a lot of role players, a lot of young guys. So I like to see which direction Atkinson takes, whether he's a system guy or if he plays more to his roster. And like, the goal isn't really to win this year either, so he might not even try that. But
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's the other side of this. Is like I said earlier in the show, these aren't the guys that are going to be here forever. So the biggest thing for Atkinson to do is to demonstrate that he can recognize who is talented on this team, recognize how they can be used, and be creative in how they're used. So whatever it is, just take Jeremy Lin. If he's been used a certain way his whole career, maybe there's a different way to use him. Maybe you use Lopez a different way. I don't know what it is. I really don't. I'm not as well versed in the Nets as I am as the Celtics. But as a coach in this situation, knowing that when the Nets become good and when the Nets become contenders and challengers to the division title and challenges to the conference title, those players that you have now aren't going to be there. So the big challenge for the coach is, can I show free agents, can I show guys around the league that I can maximize your talent, that I can take what you do and make it so much better that you will be showcased? Look, from a player perspective, that's the big thing. If I'm a guy that's 2 years out from being a free agent, and in 2 years I'm watching Atkinson use players in creative ways and say, wow, man, I want to play for that guy because he's going to make the most for me. And in 3 years after I sign there, I get to sign a huge contract. Like, look at Evan Turner, who you brought up. Evan Turner came from Indiana off the scrap heap, almost out of the league.
Yep.
Came to Boston, a couple years in Boston. Next thing you know, gets a $71 million deal in Portland. Like, that, for me, if I'm a player, I'm like, oh, damn. I want to go to Boston because, at the very least, I know that Brad's going to use me in a way that maximizes my talent. And then maybe I can get a big deal as a free agent too. So that's the big challenge. That really is the biggest challenge for Atkinson. Not necessarily how he uses these guys this year. It's how he can creatively maximize the talent that he has to make it an attractive free agent destination.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's definitely one. And I think Nets fans should be confident in that, just because Atkinson's a player development guy, and you know, his former colleagues really talk highly of him. But I'm keeping you too long, John. Let me hit you with the last question. Let's talk about the actual matchup, Celtics Nets. I'm pretty realistic. This is probably a season sweep for you guys, unless, you know, I mean, there are back to backs and random little schedule things. Like, bad teams beat good teams in the NBA sometimes. It just happens. Is there anything interesting about this matchup in your head?
Well, last season should have been a season sweep, and it wasn't. So I'm just more interested to see what the Nets do with the marketable players that they have. I think ultimately, matchup-wise, the Celtics should come in and handle the Nets pretty easily. So, and obviously, as a Celtics fan, looking at the future and having those two Nets picks, I feel very confident that the Celtics are going to get a couple of pretty good picks. Sorry to say. I'm not trying to rub it in. But, yeah, matchup-wise, I don't think this bodes very well for the Nets. And I'm just kind of curious to see how the health holds up. But, look, I know what the NBA is, and there's nothing's a given. So I don't want to sound cliche like a player, but I know that if the Celtics go into Brooklyn and don't take it seriously, that the Nets could easily win that game. There's no doubt about that. So the Celtics will have to play hard, and I'm pretty sure that with a roster in this situation, you have a real potential for this weird chemistry to build, because everybody there knows what the situation is. Like, nobody's stupid. I mean, let's be real here. Like, everybody knows what the Nets are right now. And it's not a knock. I'm not trying to crap on the Nets.
It's realism.
Like, this is realistic. This is where the Nets are. But like I said, I feel good as a basketball fan, as an NBA fan. I feel good that the Nets are on their way. Like I said, Sean Marks is a really, really good hire. And I think he's got a really great attitude. And he's already made some moves that show me that he's doing the right thing. And almost to a point where I'm like, okay, I'm a little worried that he's doing too much of the right thing.
he's doing a little too well.
I feel like hopefully we can sneak in a couple more good picks before, before all of that takes hold. So I really do feel like the Nets are on their way. Marks is a great guy.
You guys are listening to a Celtics expert right here. He sounds very, very afraid about the Nets. You guys should be really happy about that. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's okay. I really do think that it's the right guy in the right situation. And like I said, when everything is telling players that you're supposed to suck, that has this way of getting everybody in this kind of like us against the world mentality, and you get this weird kind of chemistry that builds.
Yep.
Like, look, we know we're not winning a title, but let's just go mess some stuff up here. Let's just go out there and just smack some people in the face. And if they don't like it, whatever. Let's just go smack people in the face. Let's go play some ball. Let's go earn our money and go do what we do.
And so, this roster is kind of perfect for it. You look at all these young guys that have something to prove. Like, none of them are top picks. They're all late first-round picks. They're all second-round picks. They're all D-League guys. You have Jeremy Lin, who definitely – I think he still has a lot to prove. I think he believes that as well. I think this team's going to be super fun. Bad, but super fun.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, like, that's what I'm saying. I'm not just blowing smoke when I say this stuff. Like, the Nets won't win a lot of games, but they have this potential. It's like the Phoenix Suns from a couple of years ago, where they weren't supposed to be very good, but all of a sudden things come together. They almost become a college team. And that just gets that camaraderie. And when you play loose and fun like that, weird things happen and you start winning some games. That potential exists for this team.
Yep.
So I'm a little afraid of that part when I'm looking at from a Celtics perspective. We have your draft pick. I want that pick to be as high as possible, but I also see this potential for this crazy college type NBA team to kind of come together and coalesce under this, this young coach and this atmosphere. I just see that this potential over the next couple of years for this weird run and gun, kind of crazy fun, supposed to be bad but playing above their heads kind of team.
Yeah, so I think we agree on the matchup here. I think when we, like, the conversation should end with, yeah, the Celtics will probably sweep the series unless there are random games. The Nets could be this fun college team that steals a win or two. But I want to see really how Jeremy Lin and Brook Lopez navigate that IT Al Horford pick and roll I was talking about earlier, because those two aren't really known as great defenders, but they're both trying to be, I think, looking at talking to them and sort of looking at their career paths. But yeah, I think that's going to do it for today. John, thank you very much for coming on. Do you want to plug, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Twitter at @RedsArmy_John. You can find us, the Locked On Celtics podcast, at Rainin_Jays, J-S. Yeah, that's it.
John, thank you very much for coming on. Good luck this season, man.
Thanks a lot. You too.
And that'll do it for today's episode of Locked On Nets. Thank you very much for listening. Tune in tomorrow. Our previews of the Atlanta Division rolls on. Thank you very much.
Let me get it one time. Fake the funk, keep it real, don't fake the funk. Let me see them heads high. Fake the funk.